Welcome everybody to the Listen Up Podcast. It's your boy Brandon at Future Know Dad 24.
This your boy Sam at More Life One.
Let's get it.
On today's episode, we got Coach Trench. He's going to talk about setting up a recruiting hot board. We're going to talk about our defensive line and their technique. And then finally, we're going to talk about recruiting and how we feel Florida State's recruiting is done. Sam, you ready?
Let's do it.
Trench, you ready?
I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, Coach, first, we're going to have you introduce yourself, man. We want to give everybody your Twitter or Instagram and go from there, man. Let us know exactly how you want to introduce yourself, give them all your handles, and then tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
All right. Government name, Mark Williams. Twitter handle, well known by Florida State fan base and the thousands and thousands of Twitter followers I have accumulated as Coach W. Trench Mob. Got that nickname a couple of years ago because I'm a defensive line coach. And my previous stops, being in the semi-pro range and middle school and high school, always been a D-line coach. And currently the defensive line coach and recruiting coordinator at a Division II HBCU and my alma mater, Livingstone College.
That's what's up, man. Hey, man, we are happy to get you. I know it took us a while to get you on, man. Everybody, time and everything, man. So I appreciate you getting on here, man.
Most definitely, man. Always been one of my favorite podcasts since y'all started it up. Definitely gave a different feel on the podcast scene for Florida State from the black perspective. You know what I'm saying? It caught on quick, I would have to say.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we happy about that. Even though, you know, they got some people trying to block us a little bit. It's been kind of funny, man. Like this pod. I mean, I guess because there's so many FSU podcasts, you know what I'm saying? It gets competitive, I guess. But, you know, we just try to stay in our lane. You know, it's pretty cool, though.
we
definitely appreciate it, man. It caught on quicker than we expected, man. We went from, like, we kept doubling and doubling and doubling every week. It seemed like every time we dropped and we saw a need, you know what I mean? There wasn't any podcast giving it to them from our perspective. We felt like we could only give it, you know, and all everybody kind of sounded the same for a little bit. We wanted to bring something different. So, no, I'm glad we was able to do that, man. I'm glad we were able to get you out, man. So, listen, we talked about a lot of people don't know the ins and outs of recruiting. So, you've obviously done it. You talked about, you know, having to add some more recruits. You still not finished with your class. So, talk about setting up the board and how you actually go about recruiting.
Well, my method is, you know, find the best and sign the best. We just took over at Livingstone, actually the day before National Signing Day. And as some people may or may not know, Division II recruiting is a whole lot different than the big boys, but a lot of similarities as far as position, scheme fit, and just overall ability. I think the number one thing is to make sure the guys that you're going to bring in are guys that fit what you're trying to do. We have an NFL former number three overall. Former number three overall pick in the draft back in 1992, Sean Gilbert is our head coach. We also have our offensive coordinator is Andrew Jordan. He also played in the league, played tight end and offensive line in the league for 13 years. Coach Lott, which is our DB coach, he played in the league about 7 to 8 years, I believe. and looking to add a couple more, but Coach Gilbert has already shown his prowess on the recruiting trail. You know, we got currently 26 young men signed to come to Livingstone College, and quite frankly, out of those 26, I believe we have 7 D1 transfers coming from various schools across the country on the FCS and P5 level. And we have some really good freshmen that, quite frankly, the COVID-19 kind of helped us out. Because as y'all know, the NCAA waived the SAT-ACT scores for those guys to be eligible. And it made a lot of guys for us eligible right away that, quite frankly, should not be playing Division II. But those are the type of guys that we're going after to change our program around immediately. And I feel like these last 6 or 7 guys that we have targeted right now at positions of need, being O-line, D-line, and in the secondary, if we can get these guys in, it's going to be a really good, really good season.
Hey, do me a favor, speak a little more to why the waiving of the ACT and SAT scores were a benefit.
Well, on our level, and just, you know, Division I level as well, some of these guys that were going to go JUCO became immediately eligible. So now they don't have to waste two years on the JUCO level to where they can get shuffled around or done dirty. You know, because JUCO is like a slaughterhouse. They're going to come in, they're going to get the best cuts of meat, they're going to play, and they're going to get them out. And those guys who actually need development won't be developed because they're kind of put on the back burner. But now it gives those kids the opportunity to come in and get into a program right away to start that developmental phase. So, like, we got a 6'9 defensive end sign. You know, he had Maryland, Marshall, Akron, a couple other schools after him. And, you know, they wanted them to be a preferred walk-on. So we were able to come in late and, you know, offer him a scholarship and say, hey, come in to work with, you know, Coach Gilbert, myself on the defensive line, and you're already going to be getting, you know, 13-plus years of experience, not just in the NFL, but also high-level college, you know, with Coach coming out of Pitt. Like, you're going to be able to learn that right away. And he's 3 inches taller than Coach. So, you know, the length, he's very athletic. Instead of going somewhere like a Maryland to sit and rot, you know, now he can come and actually flourish on this level and be an impact and get a real legitimate shot now, instead of having his clock set back 2 years. So it not only helps the school, but it also helps the individual players.
Hey, I got a question for you, Trench. When you talk about recruiting players and stuff, what type of players do you want on a football team? Because I always hear people always say, I want the right type of fit. I want the right type of fit. And every school wants a different type of guy. Like, some schools want, you know, a smart guy, right? They want to install a lot of scheme stuff. They want smart guys. And some guys want more aggressive guys, right? They want guys that set tones every game. You know what I'm saying? So what type of fit are y'all looking for?
We want instant impact guys. We want guys, even though, like I said, we're on Division II level, we want guys to come in with a chip on their shoulder who have the ability, may have been overlooked. For example, on a defensive line standpoint, I want guys with a high motor that are intelligent, physical, and know how to play assignment football. My linebackers, same thing. They have to be intelligent, but the most important thing for them is to always be on time, meaning be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, and then finish the job violently. My corners are different than my safeties. My safeties are more so, I want to be enforcers. I want you to be intimidated and afraid to run that deep post because you know all that what they call it that that bang eight,
yeah,
and get your damn head knocked off. You know, I want you to not even want to come across the field anymore when that happens. So when I'm looking at safeties, I'm kind of looking at, you know, Sean Taylor type, Derwin James, Ronnie Lott, you know, that enforcer. The corners, of course, need to be able to come up, run support for as much as I love Deion, but I think, you know, Rod Woodson was a better corner at in some aspects of the game. But, you know, flat out, there was no better cover guy than Prime at all. But a corner that could come up and assist you respectfully in run support. You know, so defensively, man, I look for physicality, intelligence, of course, length and speed. I don't really care too much about your size because if you 5'9", 5'10", on the Division II level, you know, you're pretty decent. We had the fortune of getting two JUCO linebackers this year, 6'2 and 6'3. And, you know, there's no doubt them boys shouldn't be playing at least on the FCS level. But we got them coming to us, and we all around, we're going to be a big ass team.
Right.
We're going to be a big team for Division II level. And offensively, man, on the O line got to be big road graders. You got to be able to run the ball. You got to be an athlete. We don't like, you know, 6'4", 400-pound lineman that can't move. We need those guys. If you 6'1", 6'2", even 6 feet, man, they can get around.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. You know what I'm saying? Quarterbacks, you know, have to be athletes. Really don't have a preference. You just got to be able to make plays at that position and don't be, you know, don't get emotional like Jay Black. And, Kay, don't want that. It's fine. It's fine to be emotional, but not do that shit after the game. You know what I'm saying? Be cool. So what, you threw 5 interceptions. And I think Jameis was great at that.
Right.
I can remember some game Jameis throwing shit 4 straight interceptions. It seemed like in the swamp, but you couldn't tell, you know, because he came right back. I'm gonna throw this bitch again. I'm gonna throw it again, you know.
And he's still doing it
in the NFL right now.
He's still doing it now. He done perfected the throw of the interception. So, you know, and our running backs. Our running backs and wide receivers, man, playmakers, man. Just be dynamic. Be able to make plays happen when, you know, turn a 5-yard loss into a 10-yard gain or, you know, just be able to go be physical, you know, fuck being afraid.
Okay.
Fearless,
I guess. I'm sorry. Where's the school located at? I'm sorry.
We're in Salisbury, North Carolina. So if you know anything about North Carolina, Charlotte is 30 miles south of us. Yeah, so you'll be seeing a lot. You'll be seeing a lot of blueberry. We got a lot of kids in the Florida area that's coming up.
I've been seeing you share a lot of the guys that's, you know, that's committing and everything like that. Because I was just curious, like, man, I might want to take a trip just to come watch y'all play. I had another question because I want to get into the D line thing. I've made a big deal about FSU's D line. Like, I don't think our D linemen play with good leverage, and I don't think they use their hands very well. You know, you're a Florida State fan. You watch them. What do you think about D line?
Hey, hold on, Trent. Before you ask that one, I got a question though.
Okay, go ahead.
I want you to expand it a little before we get into that one. I want you to expand it a little bit. So, but it's still on the same line. When you talk about the guys that y'all recruit, if we talking Florida State, right? Are they looking for? Are they looking for bigger guys? Are they still looking around the same thing? Do you think they should be looking at, you know, hungry guys, dogs, like what you were describing, right, at all these positions? versus you know, finding a smarter guy. Do you think that should expand, or should, or is there a difference between the D1 level and FCS level?
On that level, and I try to recruit on this level as if I'm at Florida State. It's all about your personality as a coach. And I think I'm different because I'm not with shaking hands before games. I guess I'm old school. You know, my coaches, when I grew up, didn't do it. So certain things I remember. I think Florida State is going after the guys that are program changers. For as bad as Willie did on the field, I believe he did a really good job, you know, recruiting. Because he brought in guys who, for one, they love the program. I think one thing Odell always says is, I want guys that want to be Seminoles. And that's, you won right there. That's a star in his own, if we want to go on this goofy-ass star scale. That's a star in his own. If you go and get a guy that want to be at your institution, that wants to help your program come out of the dark ages and get back to the line, like, that's, you know, that's a star. Hell, that's probably three stars in itself. And then, you know, your ability does everything else. You know, I haven't been following as much as I did before I got back into the game. But I will say, you know, guys like Jaden Whitby, Asante Samuel, McCray,
right?
Marvin, those guys want to get Florida State back to the top. So that makes them, you know, good. And then, you know, the guys that I feel like they have committed now, even the Willie holdovers and the new guys, I'm glad we got us some quarterbacks, and it looks like we're starting to get a whole bunch of offensive line commits, or at least interest, from guys that previously we wasn't even in the conversation for. Florida State, it is what it is, one of the strongest brands in the league. So that in itself, you can go get whoever the hell you want.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You just got to have that mentality. And quite frankly, you know, I feel like that they're starting to get there. I think this COVID-19 has been a blessing in disguise for Coach Norvell and his staff. Because his clock slowed down tremendously. And it also tapered the expectations from the fan base a little bit. And every move is not under a microscope right now, like it is in certain programs. Like, I've seen a flurry of commits to Tennessee a couple of weeks ago, and I've seen FSU fan base going nuts. And I'm like, goodness gracious. dude, we came off two terrible fucking seasons, man. We not about to get, you know, four stars committing in one weekend. We just not gonna do it. You know, Tennessee started off bad, but they ended pretty good, so they got a little momentum, man. And you know, they still the SEC, so I'm quite sure, you know, Coach Pruitt is well, I'm not gonna say Coach Pruitt, but
we know
Tennessee also cheats, man.
yeah.
Nah, but Pruitt is a dynamic recruiter, though. Like,
He ain't that dynamic.
I don't know. I mean, everybody cheats, though, Brandon. Like, what level of cheating are we talking about here?
I'm talking about Ole Miss cheating versus. I'm talking about Ole Miss cheating.
Okay. I mean, we talking about going 80 miles or going 65. I got what you're saying, but you know, I'm just saying, like, when people say, oh, they cheating, it's like, okay, well, I mean, who isn't?
yeah, You gotta go out here and get it. I'm not saying they breaking rules, but you know, you want those guys to change your program on that level, they have the resources, you know, to do it. It may not necessarily be anybody affiliated with the program,
right?
Directly, but indirectly, me as a four-star guy, I know Tennessee wants me. Somebody has seen me. You know, they're right. Gonna have football.
I'll tell you like a quick Jermaine Pruitt story. I bet Jermaine Pruitt's real. Like, I mean, he's a player. Like, he is that dude. You know what I'm saying? Always recruiting. And he told me a story about Trent Richardson, right? He told me a story about Trent Richardson.
Uh-huh.
And he said when they were recruiting Trent Richardson, he said the most important thing about recruiting is you don't get to know the kid at first. You get to know everybody else that's involved with the kid first, right? He said that's the first thing you do. He say, don't even talk to the kid. Don't try to do nothing with the kid. You just find out who's involved with the kid, what everybody think about the kid, right? So Trent said when he first found Trent Richardson, he was trying to figure out, well, who do Trent talk to? Like, who is his confidant? Like, who is the guy that he go to for stuff? You know what I'm saying? And he couldn't find about it because Trent came up real, real hard. You know what I'm saying? And he said it was really hard for people to recruit Trent Richardson because nobody knew who he talked to or who was his closest people, right? Well, he ended up finding out that it was a judge. Like, Trent had got in trouble early in his, like, life or whatever. And it was this judge that was the one that was kind of helping him out, basically. You know what I'm saying? Like, making sure he stay on the straight and arrow, making sure he do what he need to do. You know what I'm saying? So once he found out about the judge, that is who he recruited first. He recruited the judge first. So once it came time for him to finally make that introduction to Trent Richardson, by that time, the judge had already sold Trent Richardson on Jermaine Pruitt in Alabama. Before he even became this four-star, five-star prospect. You know what I'm saying? So Jermaine Pruitt, like, I tell people a lot of, like, it's coaches that's good recruiters. Like Nick Saban, like a guy like a Nick Saban, he can go recruit you after meeting you after 1 month. You know what I'm saying? Like, it don't matter. He got the name. He got the prestige and everything. Right. But then you got guys like James Coley, guys like, what's the guy from Kentucky? Eddie Grant. These guys, man, they be on these kids four years, 5 years before anybody even knows about these kids. You know what I'm saying?
Middle school.
Yeah, they be on it. So, I mean, that's why I was telling people get into this Pruitt conversation, where they cheat. I'm like, Pruitt would do that anywhere he go. Because that's just the type of, that's ingrained in his DNA. It's just, I'm gonna recruit this kid. I'm not going to, like, when I heard Dillingham say these coaches leaving all these kids, all these voicemails, I'm like, Dillingham, bro, this is the South, though. This is the South, bro. There is no limit to what you need to do to get the kid. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But I really believe if Jeremy Pruitt hadn't left, we would have won 2, possibly 3 in a row. You know, that's just how I feel.
I agree.
I love Jeremy Pruitt. Never met him. But I feel like our mindset from what I know of him is very, very similar. About, you know, pretty much we're going to win and we're going to be as violent as possible on this field. So, you know, that's just how I feel about Jeremy Pruitt.
No, I get it, man. I get it. So now on to what Sam was talking about. You've seen our defensive line play. He talked about technique and hands and stuff like that. Man, go ahead and speak to what you think about our defensive line's technique.
All right, so our defensive line potentially could be great. I think Marvin is elite.
Absolutely.
And consistency has never been a problem with Marvin. I think this year we're going to see a Eddie Goldman-esque year from Marvin. I think Marvin overall is the best defensive lineman we have. It's not even close to anybody else. He's the most skilled and the most technical. Let me see who else. We got Durden.
Mm-hmm.
Durden's motor is good. His technique is solid to average at best. But that's not, I mean, can he play at the next level? Yes. Will he be a top three rounds? I believe he could be if he gets more technically sound like Martin.
Right.
Let me see who else we got. Robinson.
Jenkins. Robinson, yeah.
Robinson is a freak athlete. I think he just hasn't been coached up good. But
my thoughts exactly, yep.
He can make plays. Robinson is who our D-line coach this year? Papa Coach P?
Yeah.
He do, Coach P, yeah. He do DNs, right? He doing DNs.
Right. He doing DNs,
I believe if he can get Robinson up to speed, especially with hand placement, and that's a big thing with D-line, feet and hands. Playing with leverage is also good. Like, I teach half man, but, you know, it's definitely easier to beat a man if you only got to fight half of him.
Right.
And if that's the same thing they're teaching at FSU, then I believe Robinson could be good as well. He can probably go, I would say, in first five rounds with a good season, a dominant performance against, you know, the Clemsons, Miami, and Florida. He can see him to the top three.
It's funny, you know. Hold on Robinson. Robinson kind of reminds me of one of the kids who was always bigger, stronger, and faster than everybody else. So you kind of get a reputation, and so you don't really have to work at it. You know what I mean? You don't have to work at it because I've always been naturally bigger, stronger, and faster than everybody else. As a coach myself, I have one of those guys named Garrison. I imagine he'd probably go D1, but he's always been bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic than everybody else. So when we try to teach him technique, he seems to just rely on the fact that, oh, man, I'm going to get by this dude anyway, so I never work on it. And that's really been his thing. But when he goes up against somebody who's just as good as him, you see him fall off a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I think with Robinson, if he gets somebody to really teach him technique and to really buy into it, I do believe, like you said, he can absolutely be a top three round pick because he has the ability to do it. He's honestly Jadeveon Clowney as far as his, you know, measurables, right?
His measurables,
Right, as far as his measurables. But he doesn't have that same skill set to really be able to, you know, to make that impact. And I do think if he buys in, I agree. I think he has a huge upside. Go ahead.
Right. Kando has just been riddled with injuries.
I think Kando gets a bad rap. Kando gets a bad rap to me because he's been injured. But if you watch him last year, he made a big jump before he got hurt. He really was coming into his own.
Yes, he was. He was playing some good ball. The most important thing for a defensive end is that bend, man. He got to be able to bend around that corner.
And that's Robinson's like
that
problem.
The NC State game was Robinson's best game.
Right.
When he damn near killed Hockman, that was the perfect bend around the corner and finish. That's teach tape right there.
Well, yeah, but I'm gonna say that's Clowney-esque. Like it looked, that's the measure. Yeah, right. that's what you saw in that play. You saw all his potential. Yeah. I think in that one play.
Right. Like if he can do that, shit, man. Three times a half.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It made six plays like that a game. I mean, shit, you're going to get four or five sacks a game. Right. Just off of that. Kane, though, I believe, has it. Then after that, let me see who else. Big Coop. Coop is, I've seen reports that he's dropped a lot of weight. So now I have to see kind of like his quickness. And I think he was like a true one technique, right?
Now let me
play more shoulder.
Let me ask a question. Because I think that actually Coop plays better with his hands than probably anybody on the D line. Am I seeing that right?
He's right up there. He's right up there. You know, with Coop coming from a great high school in Georgia, you know, they teach them guys that. So now it's just, you know, taking it to the next level. I believe Coop will be, what is this, his second year? Third?
I think it's his third year, right?
Sophomore or junior?
He's a junior. He should be a junior this year.
Yeah. So this year, I really believe he will at some point overtake Durbin as that guy next to Marvin during the season. Like for all that I love Durbin, like I said, with his energy, I think technically Coop is ahead of him. And if Coop can move with dropping that weight and be a force next to Marv, I mean, shit, you looking at like some Goldman-Jernigan combination that, you know, that shit would have been hell if them two would have been on the field at the same time. You know, because now you got two interior guys that can't be blocked.
Right. That frees up Robinson and Kane, though, to be able to make some plays.
Exactly.
That causes a lot of havoc on any quarterback you playing.
Something else I will say, I think that the D linemen last year were kind of let down a little bit by the linebackers. I think that there were some opportunities there for the linebackers to clean a lot of stuff up that they didn't clean up either. I will say that also.
I thought that had a lot more to do with confusion, though. I thought it was more confusion. I thought you had D line guys playing in certain spaces. You had linebackers confused, and so therefore they running out of gaps that they should have been playing in. I thought it had a lot to do with coaching, in my opinion. When I saw the linebackers, now some of the linebackers were just bad. We've seen that. I mean, we know that. We can't argue.
But some of it
I thought was confusion. I think when you have a good linebacker coach like Coach Maul in there, I do believe it takes away from, all right, now we ain't think no more. We're triggering downhill, and that's what you want the linebackers to always be able to do is react, trigger downhill, and go make a play. And I thought they did a lot of thinking, especially early in the season. You could see it. You could see it on their mind.
Nobody knew what the fuck was going on, including the head coach. Shit, I don't think the 3-4 was – okay, so it's two ways you can run a 3-4. You can run it two gap or one gap, which is D line. So the problem with that is now you're putting the responsibility of your linebackers to figure out what gap is the D line they're going to take in front of me so that I can take the opposite gap. You know, in a four-man front, you simplify that shit because you either head up, you got a shade, an inside shade or outside shade, which automatically puts your inside backers, if you're running a 4-2-5, in the gaps that they're responsible for. And then the 3-4, if you two-gapping it, you're giving the D-lineman the opportunity to go either inside or outside, and now you're making the linebackers think, okay, well, see, he took an inside step with his you know, his foot, and so now I go to the outside, but then the fucking D lineman to come back cross face. So now the linebacker is stuck. You got two people in the same gap.
That happened a lot,
and that's what
it creates huge holes.
Exactly, and if you got linebackers that have never played a 3-4 defense, that shit is confusing as fuck, man, and you can't do it, and you can tell D-Jack just. It was times him and Little Brooks and all, man, get the fuck off the field. Like, don't get
Yeah, they clearly don't know.
Right.
Yeah, they were like, lost.
Yeah,
and there's nothing against the kid, but it's like this scheme doesn't fit them guys. Like,
right. And you know what?
You making them look bad.
The funniest thing about that whole thing, and I think it's literally what got – well, there's two things that got Willie fired was the linebackers and the offensive line. But if he should have just brought Jim Levitt on and just made him a linebacker coach and just been done, like, that was it was – that's the one thing that I said, well, that's going to get him fired because – Raymond Witte is a damn good recruiter, but that dude is a below average linebacker coach, man. I'm talking about real below average. I mean, he might be one of the worst linebacker coaches probably in D1 football last year, to be honest with you. I mean, he's a great recruiter, though. I mean, he's a damn good recruiter, but he can't coach linebackers.
You want him in the living room.
Huh?
Yeah, you want him in the living room.
Yeah.
Correct.
But you don't want him in the linebacker
room. Nah. Nah.
Yeah. And I think that was more politics. I think that was Willie, you know, afraid to step on some toes. I think he didn't want to.
Yeah, that was his loyalty to his guys.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people used to get on me last year about being the black coach supporter. Well, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to support the black coach. I'm a black coach. But I want the coaches that's going to make me look good. You know, you could be the worst head coach in the world. But if your staff around you is great, guess what? Shit, fucking you great.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Chill, bro. We're not doing this today.
Yeah. I'm just telling you, those are my thoughts. I think he's surrounded by good. I don't think that was what he could coach.
All right. I'm not going to get into that. I've done that already. I'm not. We're going to make that a whole podcast, bro, because I think y'all,
me on that motherfucker. Please bring me on that motherfucker. I'm with you on that.
Thank you.
Man, Dabo's a great coach, man. I'm not.
No, he's not.
Okay.
Yeah, this is why he's a great coach, because he has fucking awesome fucking coordinators and position coaches. Makes him great. Because attention. I don't want to interview Venables after a game. I want to talk to Dabo because Dabo has the bubbly personality. He quotes Bible scriptures and all of that. Yeah, come on, rah-rah. Fuck all that shit. Get me Venables on here so I can hear what was your game plan going into this week. Is Venables
When the last time you ever heard
X-O's?
Dabo Swinney
talk X-O's? I'm going to do that podcast later, bro. I'm not finna get into that with you right now.
Okay. All right, we'll say it.
Good, bro.
We're going to do a clip.
He know the Dabo thing get under my skin, bro. So he be trying to, you know what I'm saying? He know what he be doing, bro.
I blame Jimbo for Dabo. Fucking God damn, man.
We're gonna have some fun. No, let's not even talk about it. We're gonna have some fun. All right, well, go ahead, man. What were we talking about? You were breaking down the D-line.
D-line. So after let me see who we got. True. I like True. True's another one from
Grayson.
Where are you from? Grayson.
Yeah.
You know, he'll come into his own. He's another one reshaped his body and gonna do a good job for us. And then the new guys that we got coming in, I don't know a lot about those guys. But if Coach P and Odell, it's all about the buy-in, man, and just the belief. Like I said, with our program, you know, our first two spring practices, what I saw was not college football players. And I was like, oh shit, we got to go out here and change everything. Part of that is true. And then part of it was like our head coach said, Coach, you got to remember these guys have been in the same system now and not been coached up properly. And they've been browbeat by a head coach and they no longer believe in their own abilities. So now it's our job to come in and, you know, and instill that belief in them by also gaining their trust. But at the end of the day, it's like, Coach, I got to go out here and get some motherfucking dogs because we got some goddamn kittens right now. You know, so that's kind of been my job as a recruiting coordinator. Like, you know, and I'm going places. I'm offering kids that a lot of the coaches in North Carolina. Well, let me just say this: 80% of our recruiting class is from Georgia. Then probably another 10% from Florida, and the other 10% from North Carolina. And the reason why is because my footprint was in Georgia. You know, like I said, I coached at McEachern for 4 or 5 years. I was there, so I know the level of talent that comes out of the state of Georgia. Florida, you don't even have to really talk about when it comes to athletes. And I always tell people a 2-star in fucking Florida is a 3-4-star anywhere else. So I'm going to get those guys and getting the North Carolina guys. And some of the guys we got signed from the defensive end side, man, out of North Carolina, coach was like, bro, y'all last staff wouldn't even offer this kid. And it's like, why? And like, because he had, you know, D1 all over him. When he didn't qualify, he was going to JUCO just so he can go D1. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. All he can tell me is no. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that's it. That's the only thing you can tell a kid. I mean, a kid can tell you. If you send out an offer to a kid, and this is what I don't understand about Willie not sending out a bunch of offers when he was at Florida State, that kid is going to tell at least 20 schools no. Mm-hmm. So it's not a strike against you if he tells you no. But yeah, you got to be in the race. Yeah, you got to be in the race. You know, why not go after I ain't even going to say his name, but QB1 at Ohio State. Why not go after him? You know what I'm saying? Shit. If he's going to say no, he's going to say no. Why not go after every 5-star offensive lineman in the book? You know, I didn't have no problem with him bringing in the big boy that went to LSU, bringing in the kid that went to Bama.
Right.
Like, shit, you got to be in the dance. You got to be in the dance to hopefully take the girl to the after party. Regardless, man, we lost resources on this kid. But what if you swing at the fences? You get big boy that went to LSU. You get big boy that went to Alabama. And then now you don't give a fuck about the 3-star that you missed out on because now you got 2 5-stars in here. You know, and then, you know, the media drives it an entire different way as well. Man, we missed on these kids. We used up all these resources going after these guys, and then we missed these two guys down here. But, you know, O-line recruiting, which I'm learning myself right now, is extremely difficult because them guys want to play. They want to play right away. Their parents are eagle. Offensive linemen parents are, believe it or not, bigger prima donnas than wide receivers and running backs.
What?
Oh, yeah. Everybody thinks offensive linemen are, you know, chill, laid-back guys, which for the most case they are. But their parents are very, very detailed. And they want to know, you know, what's going to be y'all run pass. You know, my son is a great run blocker. Well, film showed us that, too. You don't have to tell me that. You know.
Yeah, I've always said.
If y'all ain't going to run the ball, y'all ain't going to run the ball, coach. You know, we going to go somewhere where they going to run the ball. But that's fine. We running the ball 80% of the time. We going to run that bitch until they stop it. You know.
Yeah, so. I've always said recruiting offensive line is different. Like, you know, the parents be looking at the GPA, they look at the test score, they care. They do care, yeah, about a lot of that stuff, man. They
care.
Yeah.
They care. Yeah, my first offensive lineman I called, he was a 6'4" offensive tackle out of a high school here in Georgia. The first conversation I had with his mom was, "Oh, y'all graduation rate is low." And I'm like, well, I'm not talking about graduations right now. but that was the first thing she wanted to talk about. Like, let's talk about y'all academics. Let's talk about this. And it's like, all right, shit. Well, so I had to go back as a recruiter and say, man, let me get all the information that I need to be ready for this. So now when I call any kid, the first thing we're going to talk about is the academics. I'll let the player or the parent, you know, bring up the athletic part. You know, so, you know, there's been some calls where I've called a kid and you know, started going with the academic side of things first, and they're like, coach, what type of offense y'all doing? It's like, all right, well, let's get the academics, put that at the end, because that seems like the least of their concerns right now. Then we're going to go from there. So, you know, that made me stronger. But like you said, offensive alignment is definitely academically driven. Then they want to know about their coach. Then they want to know, you know, the system. We got the advantage of our strength and conditioning coach did his internship at University of Alabama. So he was there with crazy white dude.
Scott Cochran.
That just left him to Georgia. Yeah, Coach Cochran. He went from there. I think he did 1 year at FAM, and then now he's up here with us. You know, shit, we didn't hit it off. You know, we didn't hit it off real good. Our head coach told him, hey, man, we want that same shit that Bama doing.
Yeah.
You know, so he like, shit, that's what we're going to do then. So, you know, they care that. And that's big to have a guy that come from a university like Alabama that them kids have seen the results, so it's easier for them to buy in. You know, Division II level, that's really – for the most part, that's what it's about from a coaching standpoint. They want to see, you know, what have you done? Where have you been? Can I believe in you? Can I trust you? Because our facilities are not the best. You know, they're not the greatest. And quite frankly, some high school facilities are better than a lot of Division II facilities. But if those guys believe, man, you know, shit, they come in and buy in. And that's what we got right now. See, we got 26, and only one kid was able to visit before COVID-19 shut everything down. We got 26 signed. Never saw the kid.
What do you think about Florida State's recruiting so far?
Yep.
For the 2021s?
Yeah, for what we got going on right now.
Like I said, I can't give an accurate assessment because I haven't been paying that good of attention, only because we've still been going through our process. But from what I've seen from the commits, I see a lot of needs being addressed. Of course, we still DBU, so we're going to get them DBs in. I think we had some offensive lineman commit.
We had
a wide receiver commit.
You just got a transfer, offensive tackle.
Yeah, love it. Yep. From Mississippi State. Yeah. So, I think, man, and he's gonna be able to play right away, right?
Yeah. I thought he needed a waiver.
Yeah, but I thought the NCAA pretty much gave a waiver for everybody now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That, and that's another thing COVID-19 did. It's opened that up as well. For the transfers to come in and be ready to play. I think I don't want to be overly optimistic, but I think 8 to 9 wins, possibly 10 is realistic. I think the mental breakdowns that we had last year won't happen this year, only because they can recognize it now. Last year, man, them boys was mentally fragile, really for the last 2 years. Like, it was a bad situation for Willie, man. And he didn't make the shit no better. I think recruiting wise, for what's going on, I think we okay.
So, I mean, we've given our thoughts a few times on the recruiting. I still think they have to bring in more offensive linemen, specifically tackles, because I think that will determine how well we do this season. I think if they don't get some tackles and offensive linemen,
they need ready to go tackles.
Yeah.
They need some ready to go tackles. They need that guy that's going to Houston.
Right.
They need him, the guy from Houston. If they get that guy, I think you can get away with one more. I think you need two to make, because what you don't want to happen is you don't want to happen what happened to Willie, right? You don't want to go into that first year, then you get two injuries on the offensive line, and then your season just goes to shit, right? So you need is,
are you looking at a 5-win season?
Right. You don't want to be in that 5-win to 6-win floor. You want your floor to be around 7-8. You want that, you know what I'm saying? Because if you got, even if you get 7 wins, I think with the disease, I think you can still sell that on the trail, right? You get 7 wins, maybe win the bowl game, get 8 wins. If you can do that,
yeah.
I think you still can sell that on the trail. But if you get to that 5 and 6 win area, I don't know. This staff hasn't shown yet that it can punch above its weight class. They haven't showed that yet. So
right. We don't see
I think that's by design.
Okay.
I think that's by design that they haven't, you know what I'm saying, basically stepped into the heavyweight. Because right now they don't need to. Because, like I said before, Willie did a good job off the field now, recruiting. The holes that was once holes aren't holes anymore, except, you know, O-line.
The tackle. Well, we're good at guard now. We're finally good at guard and linebacker
and
now.
And that shit stretched back before Willie. You know what I'm saying? So, Willie, like I said, he just didn't make the situation better at that position. But as far as, you know, with linebackers and defensive lineman, wide receiver, running back is, I think we're fine. And the last 2 years was so disappointing on the field, because when you look at losing the trash as Miami twice, losing to Wake Forest, I think, what was it? First year we lost to NC State. We got blew the fuck out by NC State. Losing to Syracuse. Like, and then even last year, losing to Boise, which I really still haven't rewatched that game. Because I don't understand how we gave up so many points in the second half to get just beat like that. I believe that loss to Boise is really what fired Willie. I think he was fired way before even we struggled with Louisiana Monroe. Again, it goes to a mentally fragile team. I don't know, man. I think we have the capability to win with what we have on the roster, with a newer mindset. Norvell's energy, you could definitely feel it. You can see from some of the tweets from the players that they have, if they not completely bought in, they're at least 85-90% in. Norvell seems like one of those guys where if you ain't bought in, you could go. He don't got no problems letting go of the dead weight, like with who was that? Mike Arnold left not too long ago.
Yeah, he needed to go.
Williams. Yeah, and Williams been gone. Anybody else, it seemed like for everybody that we lose, he bringing in somebody. And I do like that part. They're more aggressive now than they have been in the past. But I think once football gets back and shit, we beat West Virginia and Atlanta, then we beat Boise, and we get to Clemson, and I don't feel like everybody else feels about Clemson. I felt like Clemson was beatable last year, and I feel like they beatable now. It's just that dynasties, if Alabama ain't taught us nothing, dynasties don't last long. There's going to be somewhere in there, and this year may be the year where they're overconfident. They don't work hard, like as we saw in that North Carolina game. You know, my grandfather would always say, bullies don't like being hit, you know. And North Carolina kept hitting and kept swinging at Clemson, and then they just ran out of strength at the end. But if we come, and I believe we at home this year, then we got to go to Clemson.
That's going to be a loss, Trench. That's going to be a loss.
I don't think so, man.
Trench, that's going to be a loss.
I don't think so, man.
They can play that game at Cuckoo Park. That's going to be a loss, bro.
I don't know, man. I mean, I love our guys, man. And hopefully the energy, you know what I'm saying, and the attention to detail that Norvell brings. He got great fucking coaches. You know, I just feel like a different mindset, man. Sometimes that's all you need. You know, sometimes all you need is a different mindset. But if we do lose, okay, fuck it. Everybody thought we was gonna lose anyway. You know what I'm saying? Don't get down when you lose that game, because everybody counted you out anyway. You know what I'm saying? But I really think we can get 9 or 10, man. I think we do.
I think confidence will be the key, right? If their mindset and mentality as a football team has changed, if they do go out there and beat West Virginia, then come back and beat Boise, I do think the team builds a sense of confidence of, all right, we're not the same team from before. We're not the same team that we have been. And I think that's Mike's biggest challenge, honestly. I believe if he's able to get these guys to understand, man, the verse is going to happen. You got to be able to overcome. You got to be able to stand tall and understand that, hey, man, it's a football game. It's tough. There are going to be ebbs and flows. And so you got to understand, hey, just because something bad happened don't mean it's going to continue to happen. Now, get out of that whole, oh, here we go again mentality and actually start having them fight through it. I believe if he can get them to do that, then I do believe they can pretty much beat anybody but Clemson on the schedule. I don't think the schedule is that hard, right, but they can't beat anybody on their schedule except for Clemson. Right. I don't see them beating Clemson regardless. As long as Sunshine is at Clemson, Clemson is uh-huh, top, because Sunshine is not playing. He's not playing. He making NFL throws. So it's going to be difficult to beat Clemson regardless. But I do believe they can beat anybody else on their schedule if they've gotten over that hump, because I do think defense is going to be very, very good, especially if that D-line is as good as what it is. It makes your secondary that much better, because now these quarterbacks that hurry they're not making those great throws.
Yeah, there's not a weakness on that defense. There's not a weakness on that. If it's coached properly, if they buy into the system, there is no weakness on that defense. I mean, if you just look at it across the board, it's not a weakness on the defense. It's enough good player on that defense that you should, even if you win games 21-17, 24-20. Like, that's what the game should be looking like. You know what I'm saying? Because I get that the offensive line is not going to be great, but Norvell got enough shot plays in his system where he can put up 3 touchdowns. It's enough in there to get 3 touchdowns. You know what I'm saying? So, the problem is most, like, in big-time matchups in college football, the games are played in the 30s. So, when you're talking about playing Clemson and Florida, we talking about playing games in the 30. I don't know if it's 30 points in that offense against a competent, you know, skill for skill, good defense. I don't know that yet. So,
right, like I said, them the only two. Them the
question mark.
Florida, I think it's 50-50. Now go ahead.
Oh no, I was saying my biggest question mark this year on offense is the running back. Like, who's going to be the guy?
I think the transfer. I think transfer from Texas A&M ends up being the guy, honestly. I forgot about his name. But, yeah, I think he ends up being the guy. It depends, man. It depends on if – what's the buddy got hurt? I'm terrible.
Healthy. That's
no. No, who he got hurt. He came back last year, but he still looked like he wasn't sure of himself.
Yeah, LeBourne.
Thank Taylor you. LeBourne. Yeah, so, I think LeBourne should be that. It depends on if he's ready to take that next step or not. I think LeBourne dances too much. You don't hit the hole nearly as hard, and he's always looking for the home run. And when you've been that special and that dynamic, you right. kind of you get into that mindset of, oh, every play got to be the touchdown. And so I right. think if he gets more into, hey, let me hit that second level, and then I can make my play. You know what I mean? Then I can make somebody miss and make some play. Then I think he will be the number one back, and I do think he'll be really good. I just don't know if he's ready to take that step yet. I'll have to see it, because last year he still had the injury on it, and I think he wasn't really confident. If he's able to take that step next year, then I do believe he has the ability to be the number one back.
I think that's where David Johnson comes into play on that. So, yeah,
right.
You know what I'm saying? I think if you can get him to buy in, shit, man, it's a green light at that point. You know, and I ain't even going to say buy in. If he just trust the coaching that he's getting, that he receives, he's going to be good to go. But it's still a mystery, like you said, because you don't know what the knee really is. You don't know if it's fully healed or not. That's the one thing that's tricky about knee injuries, man. So you can come back like Dante Culpepper, or you could never come back.
Right. Well, it's all about how he trusts it. If he trusts it, if it's fully healed and he really buys it, and he trusts that it is fully healed, I do think he can be special. We'll see.
Because he looked overweight last year, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was a step slower last year. He was definitely a step or two slower than what he was the year before. Absolutely. But we'll see. Sam, you got anything else, man?
Nah, man. Trench, I appreciate you coming on, man. We got to get you back on again, too, man.
We definitely going to have you on for that Clemson pod.
That Clemson and that Jim. I'll explain to y'all why Jimbo is the reason why on that pod. All right.
Sound like a plan.
Oh, Lord, man. Y'all boys something else, man. I mean, how many national championships do a coach got to win to be a good coach? I mean, how many times he got to do that, man? Y'all.
No. We not get into it. Say that.
I'm baffled by that. I'm starting to think maybe Bill Belichick ain't that good.
Hey, man. Belichick is best in the business.
All right, fellas.
Hey, man, on that note, man, y'all just heard the Listen Up podcast. We are out.
Hey, man. Share, subscribe. We need to get a lot more shares and retweets out there, man. So y'all get on that, man. Big bang.